Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Optusport Football Podcast. I'm joined as always by Phil Kitromilides and also former Leeds United striker Michael Bridges. Now let's start with this. Jadon Sancho got an assist on his Dortmund return. What's your best, I'll show them what they're missing moment in your career? Or best debut? Bridgie, have you got one?
Best debut? Sporty, I've only got one debut.
What, on this podcast or in general?
On this podcast, yeah, probably after this podcast. There's a couple of moments to stand out to me, mate. I'm actually gutted to see Jadon Sancho leave the Premier League. I quite enjoyed seeing him in there. Obviously, what's going on with Ten Hag is determined that he goes back to the club where he enjoyed his football. So I wish him all the best over then. Hopefully, he can get his attitude going. But my debut for Sunderland, it was against Port Vale. It was a 0-0 classic. I came on with 30 minutes to go. Peter Reid put us on after I spewed on the bench with the nerves kicking in. I was on the substitute bench for about six times and didn't make an appearance. So he broke us in gently. And then I was given license to go out and I hit the crossbar. I had three or four shots that went over the bar and wide of the post and got myself involved in the game. I was just turned 17 and I came off the field to find out that I'd won three Man of the Match awards, a bottle of whiskey, a bottle of champagne and a bottle of vodka at the age of 17. So that was quickly confiscated off my father. He took that and he had a great night. So I never saw them, but the debut experience was fantastic. But my moment of eat that and stick that up yours was against Sydney FC, because I was used to be at Sydney FC, and Cosmina came in, and Cosy didn't play us. So I went back to England for about 3 months. And then Newcastle Jets re-signed us for 6 months with Branko Kalina. And what I loved was when we played against Sydney FC, there was Clint Bortles in goal, old Butzer. I managed to score a penalty against him. And then we beat them 3-1 in the end, Sydney FC. And I scored a goal from about 35 yards out against Butzer, bottom corner. And I remember just turning up to all the Sydney FC directors and just giving them a little bit of have that. And signed the new contract for Newcastle Jets for another 18 months. So that was the moment of, yeah, suck on that. If you're allowed to say that.
You saved yourself, because I thought when you said that you got a bottle of vodka and the whiskey, I was just about to say, well, that explains a lot about how you got injured throughout your career. But you saved yourself by saying that your dad took it off
you. My father so I'll let you was off on a that. Great father figure and good role model.
I can imagine. Hey, Phil, have you got one where I'll show them what they're missing moment or a debut on something you've done?
You know what? I don't necessarily have a I'll show them what they're missing moment, but this is what I was thinking. The closest I've come to something like this. Obviously, I worked for Real Madrid TV for 9 years, and then I left in 2021. And so my first broadcast appearance after leaving Real Madrid TV and joining La Liga TV was on another podcast. It's a podcast I do about Spanish football. Been doing it for a while. And when you work for Real Madrid TV, there are certain things you can and cannot say. There are some things that you really cannot say. So on my debut on this podcast, post leaving Real Madrid TV, I was thanking everyone for the nice messages. And I said, guys, I've really got to say something because I've got to get this off my chest. Oh my God, Lionel Messi is the best player of all time and it's not even close. Because obviously I'd had 9 years when I was not allowed to say that in any public sphere. So that felt good, getting that off my chest after 9 years publicly being able to say, yes, obviously Messi is the best. It's not even a question, obviously. So yeah, that was good.
Did you get a backlash?
I think people just thought it was funny. No, not too much backlash. No.
Swartzy, what have you got? I like that one from Phil.
I've probably got two of those moments. I'll show them what they're missing. When I left Kaiserslautern in Germany and I went to Bradford City, I initially went to Man City on trial, and long story, but I won't go in there, but I chose Bradford City over Manchester City at that time. It was very, very different to what we see today. Chris Kamara was the manager of Bradford City, Bradford City, and at Man City it was Steve Coppell, and then he resigned literally a day or two before I was going to go. Then Phil Neal took over, and I decided to go to Bradford City. Chris Kamara is my manager, and they sold me, so I was bought from Kaiserslautern for £155,000. And then I played for Bradford City, played 13 games, And then Middlesbrough came in and bought me for £1.25 million. So that was my moment of, I'll show you what you're missing. And it actually got big headlines throughout Germany, because at that time, it was still the German Deutschmark, and it was over 3 million Deutschmarks in transfer fee. And the record in the Bundesliga at the time was Oliver Kahn going from Karlsruhe to Bayern Munich, and it was 3 million euros. So I was actually bought for more than what Oliver Kahn was bought for. To buy Munich. So that's my claim to fame.
That's a blooming disgrace when you think about it. One of the best goalkeepers in the world.
Crazy, isn't it?
Were like bang average and you broke his record.
Absolutely. Sorry, mate, nothing wrong with that, mate. I tell you what. And the other one was when I left Middlesbrough and I signed for Fulham. And it was one of those things where all the undercurrent I was getting at the club at Middlesbrough at that time was that I was too old and I was past it and my legs had gone. And I went and signed for Fulham, and I copped quite a lot of abuse for it, and people not understanding, because at the time Middlesbrough finished above the previous season. So when I was at Middlesbrough, we finished above Fulham. Fulham stayed up with 15 minutes to play in the season, and I then decided to go to Fulham and leave Middlesbrough. And the moment for me, which kind of was one of those ones where it was like, okay, I'll show you what you're missing, is when we went to the Riverside and played there towards the back end of the season, and we're Fulham, and we drew 0-0, and I played really, really well, and I got booed every time I touched the ball. And that was the moment where I was like, okay, this is what you're missing. My legs haven't gone. They're clearly not gone. We finished seventh that year and Middlesbrough got relegated. So don't really need to say much more. But not that I was the specific reason for that, but I had a part to play, of course.
Bravo.
Let's start with Jadon Sancho's parent club, Manchester United 2, Spurs 2. Who's the better result for, Phil? Who do you reckon is happier with that result in the end?
It's actually a really good question, because I think both teams have reasons to be pleased and disappointed with the result. It does feel like for Spurs a missed opportunity to have gone there, to have picked up points, to have gone above Arsenal, dominated more of the game than Manchester United. More shots on target, more corners. I don't know the possession stats, but it certainly felt like they created a decent amount of danger. It was another exciting performance from Ange's side, but at the same time, United had chances as well that really should have been a goal from Scott McTominay in the 94th minute. So on the balance of play, I guess it is a fair result, but that's my sort of journalistic analysis. As a Spurs fan analysis, I was actually disappointed. And then I was speaking to some other Spurs fans and they were like, no, it's a point. We'll take that. It's not a bad result. So after speaking to some other Spurs fans, they sort of brought me down a little bit. But initially, my assessment was, I'm a bit disappointed there. And I guess that gives you an idea of where Spurs are at the moment.
Hang on, the penny's just dropped. I'm doing this podcast with two Spurs fans. Here we go. Come on, Bridgie, give us your verdict.
I've got to agree with Phil. I was disappointed, because the possession stats...
Of course
stats,
you are.
As Phil,
of course
Phil
you
alluded
did.
To there. 60-odd% at Old Trafford. More shots on target, more chances created, more touches in the opposition box. And it was just a very, very exciting Spurs performance. And I think Ange... let's just digest what Ange Postecoglou... We've got an Australian coach in the Premier League going to Old Trafford and getting a point. I just think it's absolutely incredible. Take away the Spurs side of it, just what we're witnessing from Ange. He's going there, he's not fearful, and it was a very, very entertaining game for the neutral that was involved. But as a Spurs fan, going to Old Trafford and getting a point, you've got to be happy with that. But I guess I'm with Phil. I was disappointed we didn't get all three. But then the McTominay chance, I'm kind of going, if anybody I didn't want that ball to fall to inside the six-yard box for a header, it was Scott McTominay. So I'm secretly thinking that he might be a Spurs fan as well after that miss, and he's jumped on the bandwagon as well. You never know. But a hell of a game, and I think it was actually a better result for all the teams in and around your likes of Newcastle United that have been struggling of late, your Chelsea's that are chasing pack now, that are on a decent run. So I think it was the result did not favour either team, the fact that there's a lot of teams now going for that Champions League spots.
And the positive for Manchester United, Højlund scores again, Bridgie. What a finisher.
Yeah. Yes, what a finisher. I think you saw the relief. You know what it's like, Mark, when you're playing. You've played with a lot of strikers in your time, and you'll have seen goal droughts. you'd have seen players going through thinking, what the heck have I got to do now in training? You're seeing them bang goals in at will. And it's just, you know, the Champions League, he was flying. The Premier League has really struggled. And there's two reasons I give for that. The distribution or the service towards them, I'd be absolutely fuming if I was playing for Man United at certain times, because you have inverted wingers that he loves to play with. And if Anthony, I don't think he'll probably get any assists for the rest of the season, because he just drifts inside all the time and has his shots in the stand. Rashford hasn't been on great form. So he hasn't had the service in the supply line, but the relief in his last goal that he scored when it fell to him inside the penalty area and he slotted it away, you could tell all the players ran to him and he had tears in his eyes. And I would just say from that moment, he's broken. We know he can score goals. He's seen the Champions League. He's broken his duck. And to see him go and get another one in the manner that he did, I can see him sort of thrive now and flourish. And I'd love to see Ten Hag. I know he won't, but I'd love to see him play opposite wingers. So you've got Rashford whipping them in on the right and you've got Anthony or somebody whipping them in the left. Going back to the old Giggs and Beckham style, where instead of coming inside, just to see how much Hoyland will thrive off getting actual service into the area, because he's a predator, mate, and he's a very, very good player.
Phil, we talked about Ange, obviously, and the result, and possibly Spurs being a little bit disappointed. But one thing that Ange definitely would be very, very happy about is the fact that Van de Ven was back in the side, Romeo, and of course, Werner started his very, very first game for Tottenham. So that's a lot of positives, considering how many players have been injured. Son's away still. They've got, you know, there are things that Spurs, what they've done and how they've been able to maintain that touching distance with the top teams with all the injuries has been also impressive.
Really has. And yeah, Van de Ven came back and looked maybe like he might need, you know, another game or so to get back to his full best. But Romero's just an absolute beast. And when those two are fully fit and on form, one of the best centre back pairings in the Premier League, pretty clearly. Werner, I was positive about his signing on this podcast. I thought that he could do a job. I thought that his, you know, energy and movement could fit into the Postecoglou system. And then this performance got me a little bit down on what Werner can offer, because this Spurs team is all about sort of risking stuff and taking things on and taking players on and you know, and he didn't do any of that. He sort of slowed down all the attacks yesterday. And I mean, he held the ball up nicely for one of the goals for Bentancur. And I don't know, I think he can bring something to the team, but it's not necessarily what I thought he was going to bring, because this performance, he just seemed to slow things down and he didn't seem to have that spark that this Spurs side is all about. And then we know that his shooting and finishing can be wayward, but if he can bring energy and high pressing and pace on the break, then maybe that can be useful. And I didn't see enough of that from him at Old Trafford. I don't know what you made of that performance, Bridgie, as a striker.
He's been brought in for a different reason. Forget his goals. He's been brought in for the fact that Ange, like you say there, Phil, it's his high intensity runs, his recoveries. He's able to do a press, and he defends. He's a team player. If we were bringing him in to get the goals, I'd be really questioned that anything's going to be a bonus. And I think the highlights reel, or as somebody alluded to yesterday when I was saying there's another one for the Werner highlights reel, when he skied one into the stands, they actually said, well, his Chelsea highlights reels was like a bloopers reel. So he hasn't come here for that. It wasn't the greatest of debuts for the club, but it was great to see that Ange was happy to throw him in there. And I think his work rate was absolutely superb. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm not going to jump on and say he's horrendous, because I still think there is a great player with a point to prove. And we've just discussed at the start of the podcast, eat my words or I'll show you, he's got a lot of people to win over and a lot of points to prove. And I think he'll turn out to be a secret little diamond for the rest of the season.
I think Phil went in there, with, as we'd say, with studs slightly showing when he was talking about Timo Werner. I thought it was a little bit harsh. He's played 80 minutes of football. He's at his new club, getting used to a new system. He can score goals. We've seen it. His record at RB Leipzig is not bad, certainly before he was signed by Chelsea. And I think Ange will get the best out of him. But anyway, look, Spurs fans, is it any different?
I'm not expecting him to score goals. What you said, this is what Bridget said. I was expecting to see the other stuff from him, and I didn't see enough of that. Okay, but you're right. Maybe I was too harsh. It's one game away to Manchester United. It's 80 minutes, fine. But I was expecting to see more spark from him, and I didn't necessarily see that. But I'm willing to eat my words. And it's the 23rd of February, by the way. Chelsea against Spurs, so maybe he's got that in his diary, the date to prove everyone wrong.
Watch this space.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a warning, mate. You didn't get a yellow card for that slightly showing your studs, but it was close, right? One player I want to talk about just before we move on from Spurs is Richarlison. He scored 6 goals in 7 games now for Spurs.
Oof.
So he's revitalised, right, Bridgie?
Yes, he is back and back with a bang. You know, I think when the club and Ange talked about his off the field issues that he was having to handle with his mental side and what had been going on, I think the club must have handled that sensationally, because now he looks like a player that is looking forward to putting on that Tottenham jersey. He's a player that's relishing that number 9 role. And, you know, I think what we've seen, he's able to get goals from anywhere. So I'm delighted. There's nothing better than seeing just a striker in great form and somebody that's back enjoying the football, because at times that looked like he was just going to down tools and walk off and never see football ever again. And we don't want to see that when you're talking about world-class players. He looks in a much better state of mind. Goals always help. That performance has helped. That put a smile on your face. And I'm just buzzing for him as a footballer rather than as a Spurs man. It's just great to see somebody back at ease with their life and sport.
Next, we're going to talk about Newcastle against Manchester City. What a game that was. Entertainment, goals galore, and also the quality of goals were very impressive. Bridgie, you had bird's eye view. You had a great seat. You commentated on the game. What did you make of it?
Oh, lads, what a game to commentate on. I mean, it was just mind-blown. The goals that you mentioned there, Swartzy, I think all 5 of them are possibly goal of the month contenders, and all for different reasons. I mean, Bernardo Silva's little flick inside the area, it wasn't just the quality of the finish, it was the way that they carved Newcastle open and totally exposed Dan Burn down the right-hand side. He was too narrow, the cross came in, Silva's got a lot to do, and then you go from one end of the field to the other. The 2 attacking goals from Isak and Anthony Gordon were just absolutely brilliant. Now, I think Edison may have saved one of them, Swartzy. I want to get your goalkeeper's take on this, because obviously they had to make a change early on with the injury to Edison. But I think the Gordon goal that I saw, I reckon that, you know, he could have done a lot better in that situation. And then seeing Kevin De Bruyne come back on, I thought he was going to score the free kick. But then the actual goal, he meant that nutmeg on Shaw to get that bottom corner pass. And if there's anything any players out there that are listening that play the game can learn, it just tells you don't need to smash a ball as hard as you can and go for the top corner goal. The technique and the placement of that finish was pure world class. And then seeing that Oscar Bob, by the way, what a player and what a goal. So, mate, I was just in awe. I didn't want the game to finish. There was 8 minutes extra in the first half at half time. And then there was only 3 at the end of the game. I was wanting to see another 15, 20 minutes go up, because it was absolutely brilliant. And yet again, Manchester City found a way, and I think they're going to go on a hell of a run now and probably win the title.
Phil, it's Manchester City now. We said that they might be stuttering, might be struggling to keep touch with the top teams. Now they're unbeaten in the last 9, winning 8 of them.
Yeah, I mean, we said they were sort of struggling and stuttering, because they were for Manchester City. Obviously, we've got such high expectations of them that when there are slight gaps in their armour, we maybe jump on the bandwagon or get carried away and think that they are stuttering. But for Manchester City, I think it's fair to say that some of the performances in recent weeks have been below par. This was a really big result, and the fact that it was achieved with Kevin De Bruyne coming off the bench and scoring a magnificent equaliser and then setting up an incredible winner, I think is actually very, very telling. And it just does feel like, okay, De Bruyne is back now, let's get serious. And I just don't know, like, Bridgie, you were there in the stadium. Was there a feeling, like, when he came on, that there was expectation, or Manchester City were going to completely ramp it up now? Was there a feeling from Newcastle, from their fans, of, uh-oh, we're going to be on the back foot now? What was the feeling like when he came on?
the general consensus of everything that was going on around us. So, and I've got the doing the core comms at half time. I didn't make a lot of Newcastle listeners very happy because the half time stats, Newcastle are 2-1 up. And basically, Newcastle had never won a game this season when they've gone behind, but they were winning at half time. And I'm saying, you know, they've got to beat all the stats here. Eddie Howard never lost back to back home games at Newcastle since he's been in charge. So, that you could just feel this. And then you looked at the benches and you looked at the quality that Man City had to bring on and game changers as opposed to Newcastle's team that is very thin and you didn't see any game changers there. So I was looking at the half time and thinking, are Newcastle going to come out and play the same as the first half? Man City had such a high line, the ball's over the top, Isak was running on them, Gordon was running on them, Almiron, and they really, really hurt Manchester City in the transition, the counter-attack. However, second half they came out, and what did they do? They went back to the back four, the midfield five, and Isak up front on his own and said, can you break us down? They did it against Paris Saint-Germain, away from home in the Champions League. And what happened? They found a way. So I was very, very worried, as everybody else was sitting around me going, oh, this is gonna change, because City can do it. They've done it time and time again. And then when you see Kevin De Bruyne stand on the sideline and Pep Guardiola smiling, looking at his diamond and going, go on, young man, go and do what you do best. I didn't think, and nobody thought he'd make the impact that he did, but he completely changed the game. He found the pockets of space that Newcastle tried to nullify. And yeah, when it went to 2-2, and everybody, you could see Newcastle, there was a lot of the fans started leaving because they didn't want to see the winning goal.
Yeah, I mean, no one really thought he was going to have that kind of impact. But when he came on, I thought that he was going to have a big, big say in this game. And we kind of we've overlooked it, haven't we? That Man City have been without their best player for the whole season. This was his second appearance of the season. And okay, I know Rodri's really important and Erling Haaland is a monster and Phil Foden super talented, but Kevin De Bruyne is their best all-round player and one that is so important for how they play structurally. So now that he's back, Bridgie, is this it now? Is this the moment where they go on this monster run that everybody's been predicting that they're going to go on and leave the title challenge, make a mockery of the fact that anyone's going to challenge for them?
I still think there's going to be a hell of a challenge on between Liverpool and Arsenal. I think they're going to have a good go, no doubt about it. But Salah's away. They're going to miss him for a few matches. It's going to be interesting to see how that happens. Obviously, Arsenal have shown that they are very vulnerable at this moment in time as well, having a few losses. So the gateway has kind of opened for Manchester City. And then when you see the likes, City have got nobody away at the Asian or African Nations Cup. They've got they're getting players back. It's the injury crisis that they're looking at. So that is the scary thought process. But to give you an idea, De Bruyne has been out for 5 months. Phil, I came back from injury and I was struggling to even cross that white line to jog onto the field, let alone get the ball and think I'm going to win this game for the team. It was all about me thinking, can I get through this game and without getting injured in this? And he came out and he was just like, right, can I win this game for Manchester City? Yes, I can. So the effort and work that he's gone through to get back fit, the psychological and mental battle that he's gone through to come on and be that mentally strong in that game, in that moment when they're 2-1 down, to have that mindset is incredible. And the way he's being treated and handled, for Pep Guardiola to recognise the time for the staff to say, this is your moment to come on. I just think it's incredible. And I got injured a lot in my career. And to witness what KBD did was sensational. So, watch this space. City are going to go on a massive run. They're just picking up results at will now.
On the other hand, Newcastle, Phil, they've lost 4 in a row now. I want to get both of your thoughts on this. Where does it leave Newcastle? They're 10th on the table right now.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken about teams missing players, and I think Newcastle have been absolutely decimated by injuries over the last couple of months, and you've seen that. I mean, you've seen them look sometimes, tired. A lot of players have had a lot of minutes in the last few weeks, and I think that's just exacerbated by what Bridgie said. Look at the two benches, and I'm literally looking at the two benches now from that game, and it is really quite startling, the difference in quality of depth, because I'm also looking at the players that both respective sides had out, and there are double figures for Newcastle. So I think it's understandable that they've slacked off. I think this being such an open Premier League season, obviously the season's not over yet, clearly not. They're only 5 points off a European place. I think Champions League does feel like it's going to be too far for them, doesn't it? But in terms of them having a cup run, they're away at Fulham in the cup, that's, you know, that's winnable. It should be a good, quite open, exciting game, but that's winnable. And who knows, you know, a cup run and top six, possibly not what Newcastle fans were expecting after the big jump last season, but in terms of sort of slow progression, maybe a deep cup run and top six wouldn't be a terrible step back. I know they got to a cup final last year and made the Champions League, and it would feel like a step back, but in terms of progression, it doesn't feel like they're a million miles away. It just also feels like this Premier League season is so open. Like, there are so many teams up there, so many teams that are also overachieving, some teams that are wildly underachieving as well. So it is, it's difficult for Newcastle fans to really maybe reconcile the fact that, okay, we're not a consolidated top four team yet. We're not. It takes a while for that to happen. One good season doesn't mean that you're going to get Champions League every season.
Yeah, I have to agree, Phil. I think they've got to be very careful for the remainder of the season, because it's a run that I think the Derby win in the FA Cup helped, beating Sunderland 3-0. There was a lot of pressure eased off Eddie Howe and the team for that performance. I thought it would have galvanised. And the short quality against Man City, they just couldn't. I don't like the way they changed their style when they were pressing and they were playing the balls over the top to go in defensive. Defensive style does not suit Newcastle. They've proved that they can get broken down. The late winner in the League Cup against Chelsea when Trippier slipped when they were defending the lead as well. It's happened three times now, so I'm hoping they learn from that, and I'm sure Eddie will. However, when you look at the teams in and around Newcastle now in 10th, you've got Wolves who've got a new manager that didn't start the season very well, but they've been picking up their points. O'Neill's doing a great job. Bournemouth, who the new manager was having a nightmare, and then they've gone on an amazing run, are catching them up. And Fulham are stop-start, and then you've got Crystal Palace with your man, Roy Hodgson. So they're chasing Newcastle United. Now, Newcastle United didn't think they'd be in this position. And they've got to be very, very careful. I think the fans' expectations have gone through the roof, Phil, like you said, because of where they finished last season. However, what I respect is the club's expectations for this season. They did say that they would be happy with anything above 10th. So the reality, they've got the club are still level-headed. They'd love to go and spend money, but they can't because of this new blooming rule. But they're on a level playing field, but they've got to be very careful they don't start slipping even further now, because Aston Villa is the next game, and that could be another loss for Newcastle United, because Villa are flying very, very high under Unai Emery. So yeah, not good signs around this region at this moment in time. There's a little bit of vulnerability.
Borough doing all right.
Absolutely, Phil. On that note, Borough doing well. Yeah, I don't know what you're on about, Bridgie. You know what it is? It's just because it's not Bridgie's team. He hasn't got any affiliation with Middlesbrough at all. That's why he's not even going to mention it. So now that you brought it up, great performance in the first leg of the Carabao Cup against Chelsea, which I was at. Middlesbrough were fantastic. At the moment, they've got to be the shining light of the North East. Let's move just quickly. The five goals were brilliant. We mentioned that early on before we first started talking about Newcastle and Manchester City. I'm going to pick one of the goals as my favourite, right? And I want you guys to do exactly the same. Oof. Because they were so, so good, so different. To answer your question that you asked me about whether or not Edison would have saved Anthony Gordon's goal, I don't think so. The ball comes in behind around the defender. I think the keeper sees it really late. So I don't think Edison necessarily would save. I think they're all top, top quality goals. I loved Kevin De Bruyne's goal, because it was so simple but so difficult from that angle, and the timing was brilliant. But I'm going to have to say Oscar Bobby's first ever Premier League goal. What a touch. What a, like a double touch from left to right and then slotted it in. So I've got to give it to Oscar Bob. That was my favourite, Phil.
What a touch and what a ball as well from Kevin De Bruyne. Yes. I mean, the ball is just insanely good. It's perfect. It's extraordinary. And then, Oscar Bob with that magnificent piece of skill. It's the best goal of the five, I think. But the competition is pretty stiff. I mean, I really like Isak's finish as well. It's such a sort of a confident number nine finish straight through on goal, and the way he takes it, that just didn't feel ever like he was going to miss it. But yeah, I think the Oscar Bob goal is the best of the five.
I want to agree with you and give the trifecta, but I'm going to stick with Newcastle United. I'm going to say Isak, because the way that ball was transitioned from, there was three moments in that goal, and you've got to go back even further to see it. there was Shaw made two tackles inside his own area, inside his own half, to win the ball, and they were. If he doesn't win the ball, he gets red carded. But he won both the tackles. He played the ball into Bruno Guimaraes in the midfield. Bruno didn't even look up, and he plays this 35-yard no look pass in behind the back four of City in the high line. And then obviously Isak goes on and does the rest. So for me, I'm going to give it Newcastle because of the moment that had happened in the game and the two moments that led up to it got Newcastle back on song.
Yeah, of course you're going to give it to Newcastle.
Guys, we should talk about the Asian Cup and Australia's first game in it. Obviously, I've got two Australians here on the podcast with me, so it would be remiss of me not to ask you about the performance. That 2-0 win against India, both goals coming in the second half. Was it a bit of a struggle, Schwartzy, for them to break down India? Was it a kind of game that we sort of expected? Did you expect more goals? What were your thoughts?
You know what? I actually kind of expected it would be a little bit of a struggle because it's a different type of game. Look, we saw how well Australia did at the World Cup against better opposition. Australia, I don't think anybody gave, I certainly didn't give Australia a chance of getting out of the group of the World Cup playing against far superior opposition. This is the game where obviously Australia were overwhelming favourites against an India side who I have to say are incredibly improved upon from 2011, which you'd hope they would be. But when I played against them in 2011, they were okay, they were good. But this side was a lot more organised, a lot more disciplined. And, there was a couple of, half scares for Australia, but nothing too serious. It was more about Australia. And I thought that sometimes our delivery in the box wasn't at its best. I thought Craig Goodwin had a lot of the possession, a lot of ball down the left-hand side, and delivery in the box at times wasn't at its best. But then India was set up really, really well to deal with Australia knocking balls into the box because they had two big centre-halves. They were dominating. The goalkeeper came for everything, which that also led to the first goal Australia scoring from a goalkeeper mistake. So overall, I think it was a job done. Are there things to improve upon? Absolutely, a lot to improve upon. But I think, look, 2-0, 3 points on the board, a good hit out and a proper game. And there were some positives to be taken out of it. Like Harry Suter's hardly played any football. Again, I talked about the World Cup, similar situation, different in terms of at least he's fit. But he struggled a little bit. Mitchell Duke hasn't played quite a bit of football, hasn't played football for about 5 or 6 weeks because it's the off season from J2 for him. So I think overall it's pretty satisfying. But moving forward, they're going to have to be better. But pace yourself. Teams that go on and win these tournaments generally pace themselves and get better as the tournament goes on. So I'm betting on Australia getting better with each game.
Plus the other result, Phil, as well, with a 0-0 draw, totally helped out Australia in that group as well. And I've got to give somebody a shout out. He got an assist in that game. I've been loving watching him over here in the UK playing for Middlesbrough. And it's Riley McGree. He got an assist. He came on in the 60-odd minute, and the second goal obviously was created by him. But there's a lad playing at Middlesbrough. I speak to Jonathan Woodgate, an ex-colleague of mine. He's the assistant manager under Michael Carrick at Middlesbrough. Every time we chat, he gets excited when he talks about Riley McGree. He just says his attitude, his professionalism, his recovery runs, and he's a joy to work with. So if that's anything to go by, you've talked about a few players that haven't seen a lot of game time. Swartzy playing for the Socceroos at this moment, that'll need games under their belt. Riley's obviously didn't start the game, but you're getting a player that's coming on fresh in the game zone. And I think he had a massive, massive impact. And the only other stat that disappointed me from the game was that there was 14 corners to Australia. There was none to the opposition. And we didn't see Harry Suter get on the end of one of them. So maybe it's the rustiness that you're on about, Swartzy, and the two tall centre-halves that India had. So, it was a professional job that Australia and the Socceroos got done. And Graeme Arnold will be delighted going into the next match, obviously, especially with the other result.
I think Riley McGree is big. It is important for this team if they're going to go far in the tournament. You're right. He's only played, 13 league games for Middlesbrough this season. He's been hampered by injuries. Yeah. So he's only played less than half of their games. So it's important that he gets back to fitness. We saw how good he was at the World Cup. I don't think a lot of people expected him to start, but obviously the injury to Aidan Rustic opened up a possibility at that World Cup. I thought Roy McGree was excellent. His work rate is outstanding, and he's technically a very good footballer as well. So you're right, Bridgie. I think that's a big positive for Australia moving forward. Him getting that game time and making an impact when he came on. And like I said, going forward, they're going to have to progress. That's just normal. They're going to have to get better as the games go on. Goes without saying. Don't have to be a rocket science to know that one, but it's exciting.
Shorty, I'm going to ask you about the result. Obviously, that the Socceroos got. Who, including the Socceroos, are the threats to win this?
Oh, goes without saying. For me, Japan are the number one favourites. If you look at their squad, it is outstanding. It's a top class squad of players. It's whether or not they can create a good team out of it, but Japan will be very tough. They won their first game against Vietnam. They were 1-0 up and then found themselves 2-1 behind. So they got themselves back in the game, won the game in the end 4-2. I kind of was just a little bit surprised about the way the goal scoring went. But I think Japan are definitely the favourites. Korea, Republic, not far behind that. They've got a very strong side as well. And then it's a number of teams. Obviously, Australia are right in that mix as well. But they're the two for me, two teams to beat. It's going to be a tough tournament. Venues are great. Stadiums are great. The support was really good in the first game for Australia, which was outstanding. And hopefully I'm sure it'll get better as the games go on, as the tournament gets reduced in terms of knockout stages. I think we're looking forward to some cracking games moving forward. Looking forward to it. Let's move on to La Liga. It was the Basque Derby. And so it was Athletic Bilbao against Real Sociedad. I think you've described it in the past, Phil, something along the lines of it. Like, it's a derby, it's a big derby, but it's kind of a friendly derby. The fans like each other. Is that right?
So it's a really unique fixture. Yeah, I've spoken about it before on the podcast, where it's a real fierce rivalry between Athletic Club and Real Sociedad. And yet, I think it's the only derby in the world where fans are mixed. So this was being played in Bilbao at the magnificent San Mamés Stadium, over 50,000 people, tremendous atmosphere. There was an away section, 400 Real Sociedad fans, but dotted in and around the Athletic, the home fans, were loads of Real Sociedad fans. They'd gone with their mates, who were Athletic Bilbao supporters. They'd been sitting there, or Athletic Club de Bilbao supporters, sitting there with them, watching the game together. And this is what this fixture is all about. It is about unity. So these two clubs don't necessarily like each other, but they recognise, first and foremost, we are Basque. We're Basque brothers. This fixture is a celebration of what it is to be from this region. We are Basque above everything, and then we're rivals. But first and foremost, we're united by this bond that we have. And I think that's really nice to see. Obviously, there are people who have said, that's not football. That's not a derby. That's not rivalry. I want animosity. I want people frothing at the mouth. I want screaming. I want blood. Well, no. I mean, you know, if you want that, you get that in pretty much any other derby in the world. This is unique. And like I said, believe me, there is a real atmosphere there. It's not just everyone sitting there holding hands going, la, 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 we are all Basque. We love each other. No, they really don't like each other. But at the same time, they realise that they are united by this bond. And it's actually a really special thing in the world of football and really quite unique. So the games in themselves tend to be like really high intensity, really fast, really quick, a little bit British style. And it's a fixture that everybody needs to experience at least once in their lifetime, just because it is so different, Bridgie.
Phil, I'm sorry, mate. I do not want to go to a derby game and sit next to my mate that's supporting the other team, share a beer with him. He's bought the first round of drinks in, right? His team score. He's 1-0 up. His team scores second goal. And I know that it's my round next. And I've got to go and buy him or her a drink, knowing that his team have just scored two goals. And that does not sit well with me. You haven't sold the atmosphere to me. I think I would, if I'm going to go with my family, I'll take my kids. But I'm not going there to sit next to somebody. Sporty, what's your take on that? Surely you're not up for that neither.
I am, yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be great. You know what? I'm intrigued. I love Bilbao. I love the area. I love San Sebastian. I love that whole area, northern Spain. I've got good friends who live in that part of the world as well. So I've actually been invited to go to Bilbao and spend time there, get a tour around the city, and also, more importantly, all the proper bars and restaurants to go and visit. So to take that in with a football match, which my friends are mad Bilbao fans as well, so I'd love to do that.
Bridgie, you can still banter with them. You were just talking about that. They still banter with each other. They're still laughing at each other. Like, if you go 3-0 up, you're laughing at your mate. It still works like that. Just no one's, like, punching anyone or screaming, you know, we're going to kill you. It's just, there's still banter.
Yeah. Phil, this is the kind of thing that I loved Australia. I love being in Australia. The thing I couldn't get my head around is that the fans would sit next to each other when they, you know, you've got to separate them. You want to give them stick, and you know that's the culture that I've been brought up in. So when I was seeing like the A-League games and the fans are mixing in, they're sitting and they're joking with their friends, I'm like, no, you don't want to. Do not speak to that person till the end of the whistle, and then
you want
give
hatred.
Them stick.
No, you want hatred, you want violence.
There's a difference between hatred. I'll tell you what I will do, Phil. I will go at one of the games, but you said there's a section where there was 400 fans were put into, yeah, from the opposition.
Yeah.
I'll go and sit and I'll experience that, but I want to go and sit with the rest of my fans from the rest of my team. I don't want to be sitting with other jerseys around us. No, that's my culture. Sorry.
That's just a step too far. Yeah.
Bridgie wants to see people in cages. He likes to see the volatility, what a cage does to a fan. Put them behind a cage fence and let them act like animals.
Remember,
that's what he wants to see.
I have grown up in a region in the northeast where Newcastle and Sunderland fans do not get on, and whenever they can, I mean, it was just great to see the last match actually where 7,000 away fans were allowed back in. I think I'm hoping that the Old Firm derbies now up in Scotland have seen that you can't do matches without having hooligans and without having fights going on, because it was nice to actually see away fans in Newcastle go to Sunderland and get out unharmed, and everybody made a thing of it. But let's not get distracted from this. This is the one that...
It was never really a competition, though, was it? It was Newcastle against the Sunderland side, who have done really, really well, and they're looking to find their way back to the Premier League, but they're a long way off it just yet. It was always going to be a one-sided contest, let's be honest.
Stop fueling the fire. Let's get back to La Liga. Come on.
It was. Know where you are at the moment in the pecking order. At the moment, Sunderland are a long way off Newcastle, as are Middlesbrough, let's be honest as well. Just before we move on from the Basque derby, Phil, Athletic Bilbao, third on the table in La Liga. I know they've played one game more than Barcelona and Atletico de Madrid. Do they have a chance? Outside chance?
And Real Madrid, yeah.
Yeah.
To win La Liga, no. I don't think they have any chance to win La Liga, but to get a Champions League spot, yes, very much so. It's pretty open in La Liga this season, given that Barcelona and Atletico Madrid are really, really underperforming, and Athletic Club are just a really good team to watch. They're really, like I said, intense. They have more sprints than anyone else in La Liga. They run more meters. They're very, very physical. They get the ball quickly, very, very fast. They've got some really good players. And Ernesto Valverde, the former Barcelona manager who was sacked while he was top of the league with Barcelona, is doing a tremendous job. So watch out for them, because they could be back in the Champions League. They're going really well. They won 2-1, by the way, against Real Sociedad. I didn't even mention the result. Got carried away with talk of the atmosphere, but it was a really good result for them. And yeah, like you said, they're third, 8 points behind leaders Girona.
Well, and the only thing I'd say about that is your hashtag always watch Girona has taken a bit of a hit, hasn't it? I mean, let's be honest, you guaranteed goals.
Right.
You said watch Girona, you always see goals. Bridgie, for the first time, watched Girona play. I had a look as well. Come on, seriously, it was not a single goal. What is going on with Girona? Have the wheels fallen off? Are they going to nosedive now?
It was 0-0. Okay, it was 0-0 against bottom side Almeria. I mean, it was the first 0-0 in 10 months for Girona. It's only the second time this season that they hadn't managed to score. Actually, they played really badly, and it was the kind of performance where you just got at a loss for words to explain what went wrong. Literally everything went wrong. They didn't do anything right. And I was watching this with my son, who knows about hashtag always watch Girona, obviously. That's why I was watching. And he knows that Almeria are bottom of the table and not very good. And he goes, Daddy, what's going on? Almeria are better than them. I was like, mate, I don't know. I can't explain this. But Girona weren't doing anything well at all. I would say, though, they played so badly. They played really badly, Girona. And they came away with a point. They managed to get something from a game where they did not perform well in at all. So I think that's quite positive for them. And that point does put them a point clear at the top of the table ahead of Real Madrid, who are off winning the Spanish Super Cup.
Bill, there's one thing. This phone never stopped ringing and getting text messages yesterday. I was in this local snooker club having a game of snooker, watched the Manchester match against Tottenham, and we're in there, and I was just about to leave the snooker club, and I made sure that I told everybody in there, I said, by the way, there's a hell of a game on tonight. I said, forget Real Madrid against Barcelona. I said, Girona's the team to watch, man. They're playing bottom of the league. It's going to be a goal fest. Hashtag always watch Girona. And I mentioned your name. I said, you know, the man that knows everything about the Spanish football and La Liga. And I got home and the lad said, you really made us miss Real Madrid against Barcelona to watch that toilet. So you've cost me. I thought they were going to turn up this morning outside my house and start protesting. But I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. It was a little blip on the radar.
That is a lovely and beautifully told story, Bridgie. Unfortunately, it's also physically completely impossible because Almeria against Girona was played several hours before Man United Spurs and 6 or 7 hours before the Real Madrid-Barcelona game. So I think your friends were either sort of time-travelling in rather strange ways or it maybe didn't happen. Maybe.
Never let the truth get in the way of a good story for me to try and have a go at you. Good call.
And also, people with big noses, you should never believe what they say, because that is low rubbish.
Brilliant. Oh, class. Yeah. Oh, you've got us, Phil. Sorry.
Let's move on to Real Madrid against Barcelona in the Super Cup final, which was played in Saudi Arabia. What a game. I mean, Real Madrid tore shreds off Barcelona. What is going on? I mean, it just showed the gulf in class, right? And it's shown that how far Barcelona have fallen and how much under pressure Xavi has to be now. Because that was not only the scoreline, it was the way in which they lost the game.
They lost 4-1, Schwartzy, and honestly, it could have been, if not double figures, but I mean, Real Madrid could have scored 7, 8 or 9 maybe if they'd wanted to. It was so, so comfortable. I put out a tweet yesterday saying I've lived in Spain for 12 years. I've seen a lot of Clásicos and this was the most comfortable Clásico win for Real Madrid that I can remember. It never, ever felt in doubt, and it helped that they were 2-0 up after 10 minutes. Vinicius Junior scored a hat-trick. It's only his second ever hat-trick for Real Madrid. Rodrigo scored in the second half. Jude Bellingham didn't score, but he put in a brilliant performance, and his assist for Vinicius' first goal is just absolutely out of this world. There's a great way that they describe things in Spanish. When something's fantastic, they say fantasía, fantasía, it's fantasy, and that was pure fantasy, the Jude Bellingham assist for the first goal. And yeah, I mean, listen, Barcelona won the Spanish Super Cup against Real Madrid a year ago, 3-1. A really, really good performance. Barcelona are reigning league champions. They finished way ahead of Real Madrid last season. But this season, they are really off the pace, really off the pace. And this was a worrying result for Barcelona, just because they seemed second best in every aspect. And Xavi is under pressure. I've said on the podcast, and I don't think that... don't think he's going to get sacked this season. I think they will see him out until the end of the season. But boy, they are under serious, serious pressure, and they are not playing well at all.
Phil, a couple of things from me from that game. Obviously, you've been in the know over there. The high line that Barca played...
suicidal.
I mean, listen, we know they want to press and all the rest of it, but they got exposed like ridiculous in that moment. Has that come into question? And going on to a little different tangent, Vinicius Junior's celebration... He ran off with a number 7 jersey on the corner after his first goal. And I do believe he did the Ronaldo swee or whatever he does, his celebration. Has Ronaldo got that as copyright? And could he potentially sue him? Or has he done this, has he done this before? Because I've never seen him do it.
I think it was in homage to Ronaldo because it was being played in Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure if it was in the stadium that Al Nassr play at, but I think it was in homage to Cristiano. So I think he'll probably let Vinny off on that one because, he was boosting his ego. The high line, yeah, it was really sort of evident that it was not working for Barcelona. It got exposed badly in the first half. And if you're going to press like that, and I was talking to a journalist here about it, you're going to press like that and play high up the pitch, you need to do that with someone like Gavi in the team, and Gavi isn't in the team, and you lose a lot when he's not in the team, and you try and play with that kind of high line, and Real Madrid just exposed it really, really quite simply. I mean, There were individual errors as well for the first goal. Jules Koundé is really, really at fault, even though, you know, it's a great pass from Bellingham and Vinny does very, very well. There were individual errors, but yeah, Xavi is being questioned tactically as well. And it's not just, you know, the team aren't playing the kind of magnificent football that Barcelona fans want. It's that they seem to be technical and tactical issues, kind of basic ones, that aren't working at the moment.
Couple of things. Vinicius Junior's hat-trick was inside the first 39 minutes. It was then 3-1 because Lewandowski scored after 2-0 down. He went to 2-1 and then obviously Vinicius Junior. That was pretty much game over from that point of view, wasn't it? I mean, that's how the dominance was. And like you said, Phil, they could have gone on and won by far more after that.
The thing is, Barcelona have been consistently conceding goals early on in games, and they've been consistently, and to use Bridgie's favourite phrase, absolutely toilet in the first half of matches. If matches lasted 45 minutes in La Liga, they'd be 14th. I mean, that's a really striking statistic. And I just read something before coming on air. In La Liga, they've played 19 games. They've only been ahead after 75 minutes in three of those games. They've needed the last 15 minutes to get out of trouble consistently in La Liga. And again, they gave up a big advantage really early on to Real Madrid. They were not good in that first half, and it was obviously too much. But yeah, big problems for Barcelona. And I didn't necessarily see this coming as well. I remember after, I think it was the Madrid derby, I think I wrote a piece in my Optusport column saying, no, Real Madrid have a much worse squad than Atletico Madrid and Barcelona are playing great football and they're going to go on. And wow, shows that I know absolutely nothing, because the shortcomings in the Barcelona squad are pretty evident for everyone to see.
Does it seem like, Phil, that there's been a, like, you know, when you see in teams when they hit a wall, they hit a brick wall and it doesn't seem like they're able to get out of it, that they don't seem to be fighting for the manager? Does it feel like the players are not listening anymore to the manager as well?
They're having a Man United in my eyes.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are people that are definitely underperforming for whatever reason. João Félix and Robert Lewandowski, two absolute superstars who are way below what we're expecting of them. They have had injuries. Obviously, Pedri's been missing for a long time. Gavi's out as well. Ter Stegen in goal, who was so important for them last season, saved so many goals. They won 11 matches 1-0 last season, with Ter Stegen making some unbelievable saves. And it's little details like that have been the difference this season. I don't know if players aren't fighting for Xavi, but there certainly seems some players who are not necessarily as motivated as they possibly should be.
Bill, a couple more from me going into the remainder of this season in La Liga. Obviously, Girona and Real Madrid. Who's going to do it? And the other one for me, which I'm very excited about, are we going to see Mbappe at Real Madrid next season?
Oh, no, you said the M-word. Oh, talking about Mbappe, yeah, it happens a lot. People talk about Mbappe a lot all the time, consistently for the last 5 years in Spain. I've heard that word repeated so many times. It's okay, Bridgie, it's what everybody's asking. I think Real Madrid are playing it pretty cool, to be honest. I think they've been burnt so many times that they're not that fussed now. So if Mbappe wants to come to Real Madrid, the ball is in his court. I think he has to make the first move. He has to show that he is willing, because they've been burnt so many times. They thought he was coming 5 years ago. They thought he was coming last year, and it doesn't happen. So it's up to him, I think. And are Real Madrid going to do it? It's theirs to lose right now. And I know that feels silly with them not actually being top at the moment, but they've got a game in hand on Girona. They're a point behind them, and they are clearly at the moment the big favourites, because they've got experience, they've got a much bigger squad, they've got a manager who's more experienced in this kind of thing than Girona, who are their title rivals. We're discounting Barcelona, we're discounting Atletico Madrid at the moment. It's between these two, and if it's a straight race between Girona and Real Madrid, you obviously have to back Real Madrid, obviously.
Phil, if you look at the fixtures coming up, right, obviously they've got Copa del Rey coming up in 4 days' time against Atletico Madrid. And then they've got a run of fixtures in the league up until the 4th of February. And then 7 days later, they play Girona. So they play 4th of February, they play Atletico Madrid in La Liga, and then Girona the following weekend. Could it almost not be over with, but literally Real Madrid in control of La Liga after that Girona game on the 11th of February?
Yeah, could be. I mean, obviously, we have to see how Girona handle the setback of dropping points at Almeria and whether they can come back. And because when you win a league title, guys, you just got to be relentless. You just got to get into that zone and just relentlessly win games, win after win after win, find a way to win matches. And Real Madrid know how to do that. Real Madrid have been doing that for a long time. And Girona haven't. So that's what makes Real Madrid clear favourites. It is an interesting...
Music to my ears, Phil. Keep talking them up, because there's one thing that is consistent with me. I do support a lot of clubs, as Swartzy keeps telling you. There's one thing that is consistent. They all wear white. Real Madrid, Tottenham, Leeds United. There you go. They all wear the pure white. So there is one thing that is a constant.
Well, I think the Los Blancos are going to win this season, Bridgie. But yeah, watch out, by the way. You mentioned the Copa del Rey. Barcelona are away to a third division team in the Copa del Rey this week. And if they lose then, oh my word, the pressure will be absolutely enormous on Xavi. So yeah, just keep an eye on that, because that could be interesting.
Yeah, off the back of that hiding against Real Madrid, that anything's possible. And then we may even see Xavi... possibly gone after that, because I can imagine if they lost to a third division side away from home in Copa del Rey. No, you're not having it, Phil?
I still don't think so. I think he'll see it out to the end of the season. There's just no one else, really. I mean, they've got Rafa Marquez, who's the, you know, B team boss, but I can't see them sacking Xavi and bringing in. Remember, they haven't really got any money as well. It's not like they can go out and, you know, say, you know, we'll bring in a huge coach and pay him loads of money. They haven't got any money, so, you know, they've got to stick with Xavi, I think, until the end of the season at least.
You say they haven't got money. They just signed a Brazilian striker in this window. They always find a way of finding some more money somewhere, Barcelona. They do something. If there's a threat that Barcelona is going to drop out of the Champions League places, you watch. They're going to have to do something, because they can't afford not to finish in Champions League place.
Man, speaking of money issues, right, not only in La Liga, we've got to go back quickly just to the Premier League. Don't be surprised we don't see Everton and Nottingham Forest in a lot more trouble this season. There's big speculation that there's going to be more deductions and things going on. And there's big talk that I've just found out that they're going to be changing the rules and regulations going into next season in June, July, that may allow others to get off with it. And they won't, like Manchester City saying, they will talk and have a chat to the leagues next season when the rules are going to change midway through. So I don't know what to make of it. I've got to say I'm bang against anything that is going to detract from the Premier League. And I'm sorry, Phil, where you're able to spend whatever you want. If I'm an owner of a club and I want to spend whatever I want and I want to put myself into a financial situation and teams are going to get stopped from bringing the best teams to the league, the Premier League have got to be very careful because other leagues will try and capitalise as best they can on this situation. So I just think the next few weeks and months coming into the Premier League could be very, very dangerous for some football clubs. And I'm really worried for Nottingham Forest and Everton.
Yeah, so watch your space with regards to other Premier League clubs, potentially even Everton, because I know that's in the next, I think in the next 24 hours, 48 hours, we're going to find out if there's any more point deductions, any more penalties, and also potentially, like Bridgie said, to any other clubs. Well, guys, that's all we've got time for this week. I want to thank you both again for joining me. Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Bridgie. Great to see you guys again.
Cheers, Swartzy.
Absolutely awesome. Thank you, Mark. Great to see you, Phil. Thank you for all the info on La Liga. And I'm sorry I tried to stitch it with the Girona crack, but you did actually expose us and catch us out, so well done.
Anytime, Bridgie, anytime.
I don't think that was a sincere apology, Phil, because he was desperate to try and give you a bit of stick. But anyway, remember, you can watch every game of the Premier League and La Liga live and exclusive on Optus Sport. And the Women's Super League is back on Optus Sport next weekend, with possibly league debuts in store for Charlie Grant at Spurs and Katrina Gorry at West Ham. See you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.